Hi, everyone. It's Gary Barkalow with Sam Williamson, and we have a guest tonight that I can say I am completely in love with, and it's my wife, Lee. And so tonight, I've just noticed, I said earlier, that I have seen a whole lot of names on the chat line that I haven't seen for a long time, and it must be because we have Lee on, because Sam and I are on it every time. So I'm really glad you're here. And we're really looking forward to this. I want to start with a quick story, though, before we have Lee start, and that is several weeks ago, maybe it was a month ago now, Lee and I did a kind of a couples weekend in North Carolina. There was a friend of ours who they wanted to invite a number of couples over at their lake house and just have us kind of take the weekend talking about our heart, who God has made us to be, what has He written on our heart, what's He written on our spouse's heart, and how do our lives come together and share destiny. And so we had this weekend, we had five sessions. Lee actually did four of them, and I did two of them. And at the end of the weekend, I had two very significant comments given to me. One was while we were praying, and the guy that was praying said, you know, I just so appreciate Gary's sensitive heart and so appreciate Lee's profound words. And I thought, well, okay, that makes it clear. I cried and she spoke words of life to people. And then Jeff Andresian says at the end, he said, you know what? Now, we were praying at the moment, but he said, I really want an upgrade. He said, I love all this time speaking with Gary, but I want an upgrade. I want to start speaking with Lee now. So that's my wife. That's the kind of words she shares, the stories she gives, and how she approaches people. And it really is remarkable. So,
is it okay to swear on this?
Yeah.
Now that you've made, now that I have to try to live up to that.
He's put you on the pedestal. Just hang on.
So, with that, you know what, Sam? Why don't I let you lead in kind of with the first question as we venture into this conversation?
Okay. You know, Lee, I have heard your Sheer Beauty series that you did in Australia, I think 3 years ago. I don't remember. And I was just moved at – I was moved at what you said. I was also just moved at the way women were moved by what you said and the way that you brought them into the presence of the Lord. And I was just wondering if you could, in some way, summarize, what is it do you feel is the message that God has given you to speak? Like, what's the message that's so inside you, you can't stop it? So what's the message that you feel God has put on your heart?
Gosh, well. Yeah.
I'm going to start with an easy question.
All right, thanks. I think that if there's anything that I want to come out whenever I speak or because I want it to be my life, true of my life first, is to just be madly and wildly and completely in love with Jesus and to have unwavering devotion in the first love. And I think that would be... anything I can say about that, any different way I can say it, and I say it from father to daughter, from lover to beloved, from king to queen, I just want to find different ways to say that. And so the unwavering devotion just, you know, waste your life on the Lord. He is worth it. And it's really the only thing that will not bring any regret in the end. And to me, it's the only thing that everything else flows out of. So I think if I want to find the spring or where, you know, the head, what is the beginning of the river called?
Headwaters.
Yeah, it's there, and so. So all the power of a life flows from that place and all the meekness, because if you have all this power but it's not coming from that place, then you don't have the meekness. Mm-hmm. So you don't really have the power, you just have soulish power, which God hates, mm-hmm. You know, which we use on each other to to try to impress each other. But so just the unwavering devotion, the relentless time spent getting oil, being in his presence. I think that's where the greatest part of our life, where we're changed the most, where we're anointed the most, the secret place, and sometimes it's the hardest to choose, because life comes at us hard. But anyway, that's what I would say.
Let me tell a story with this, and I won't do this every time. I'm not setting a pattern here. But when Lee and I went to Australia 3 years ago, maybe, where the first weekend she did a sheer beauty retreat with the women, and this one ministry was hosting it, and the next week I did calling, but in her retreat, I was the AV guy. And this was a day and age when, you know, we brought the DVD players and DVDs, and so I was back there trying to queue up clips, and we had a sound guy, and all this was going on. And Lee did this, one of her sessions that she does in Sheer Beauty is about just the romance with Jesus. And she shows these various clips, I could hear the women gasping in some of it, just catching their breath. They were so taken by this idea and this deep romance, not this surface thing that we've been taught, this kind of lip service kind of thing, but a deep love. And I had a number of women come over to the sound booth after that, because this is the first time I've sat through all of her retreat, and came up to me and said to me, "How does that make you feel? Are you jealous?" And it was really amazing, because they really hit me, because I did have a deep sense of jealousy of this love for Jesus that Lee has. And she was describing that we're all supposed to have. It was that passionate, it was that deep, that descriptive, that you could feel a jealousy, because it's a real thing. This isn't just religious talk. And it hit me deeply, of what our relationship with Jesus is supposed to be like, just as Lee just described it.
Well, what I love about the way she described it is, so I said, "What is the message that you would want to bring?" She said, "Whenever I speak," and then she paused and she said, "and I want it to be true of my life." You know, so the very thing you're talking about is, it's not just something Lee talks about, it's something she even says, "I just want this to be so true of my life, is to be wildly in love with Jesus, unwavering in devotion." So Lee, how did this message get formed in your heart? I mean, how did you spring from the womb saying, "I'm wildly in love with Jesus"? Did it grow over time? What happened to you? How did this come about?
I haven't really thought about that, so I'm not positive, but I think it was a little bit of both. I mean, when I first came to the Lord, I just thought, I was 10, and I thought, "He's coming back any minute, and I can't wait to see him." And I've told him all my life, "I can't wait to see you." And I've said all my life, I said, "You know, I just want you to come on your white horse and swoop down and carry me away." So that's something I said before I had any idea of who he really was, because we didn't go to church. I was saved, and I was by myself in it as a teenager and even before that. So, but then I think the Lord put in front of me, and I gravitated to and looked for mentors and teachers who would teach that. You know, because sometimes you see a teacher and people love them, and then you listen to them, and and they don't become part of your story.
Right.
Because whatever they're teaching is just not grabbing you, or it's not, you know, the message that you want to bring. So just gravitating toward mentors, toward people who want to abandon their life to God, and it's worth it. And some of my teachers are, you know, just like, I love to read the stories of martyrs, and I realize that's kind of intense, but I like to read them one after another, and I like to keep track of the sentences that they said, and I like to keep track of the... Because one day the Lord said to me, he said, tell me all the abandoned sentences that people said in the Bible. I was in the car, and I, for some reason, I kind of just knew them. You know, when Esther said, if I perish, I perish. And when Job said, you know, if you slay me, I will trust you. And I counted all loss in view of the surpassing greatness of knowing you as Lord. And be it done to me according to your word, and not my will but your will. And one thing have I desired, just one, and that's to sit at your feet and pour out my love. That's a priestly place, you know, just to be a priest to God on the earth, just to be. So many want nothing to do with God, and there's so few that love him. And then, you know, there's so few, comparatively speaking, in the earth, and here he is desiring and deserving unwavering devotion from us, you know, and just sometimes that's exciting, and sometimes, you know, I told the Lord just probably a week ago, I just said, I don't want to be your beloved. I mean, I just did not want to be it, and I said it, and, you know, and then I have a little page in my journal where I wrote a resignation letter. I quit. You know, I don't want to go to hell, but I quit.
The
fire. You know, I'm done. It doesn't work. I don't like you.
But it seems real. It seems like a real relationship.
Well, I think that's what he lets us have, which is crazy, you know. It's just crazy that he lets you have where your heart is and what you really, you might as well tell him what you really feel about him, whether it's I am madly and wildly in love with you, or, you know, I don't even
like
you. Yeah, and I quit. I just, you know, you don't, because it's like Job said, and this is what I've been feeling for the last years, where the Lord just puts his sword pointed right at your heart, and he's dealing with things. And he won't let you go. And to remember that it's his jealous love instead of something else is so hard at times when he's relentless. And there's a song called Relentless, you know. You won't stop until you have it all. And he won't. He won't stop till he has it all. And the other thing that I like to teach and speak on is the end of the story. Because all of this is going to come at the end of the story in ways that none of us can even imagine right now. And because what happens at the end of a movie, everything, you know, the hero comes back when you thought he was gone, he was lost in the story, and then everybody that believes in the hero and everybody that's fighting for the same thing comes back, and it's their finest hour, and that's where we're going. And so that's the other part. And they're so related to each other, because the only way that we're going to be able to get through the story that's coming with the martyrs and with the choices that we have to make and all of that is when we're living completely in unwavering devotion. And when they try to offer us, when the harlot church shows up and says, hey, join us, you know, we will be so in love with Jesus that it doesn't matter what they do to us or take from us or accuse us of. We will be unwavering. And when the Antichrist comes and says, you know, if you don't take the mark, you don't eat, you don't sell, you don't get heat for your children, you don't have an apartment, you don't have a car, you don't have anything, you know, it won't matter. So I love to tell the end of the story, because none of us, there's been no part of the story that's as glorious as it's going to be, and it's us. We're going to walk into a place of glory that we've all longed for with groanings and longings too deep for words, you know, to see the signs and wonders again, to see the great harvest come in, the multitudes of people coming out of darkness. And
so, let me just interrupt you a minute, and I don't want to. So you start by saying, I want to talk about this and I want to live it. But it feels to me that you are filled in many ways with this passion for the Lord, and it's like you want to, I don't know, there isn't a good word for this. I was going to say you want to infect other people, but that sounds bad. But it seems like part of you just wants everyone else to catch this love. I mean, is that part of you? Is, 'cause just as you're talking, I feel something stirring in my heart. I feel like it's contagious in a good way. Is that part of it? Is part of your love for God such that you just want to make other people love him?
Well, and I mean, isn't that the work that he does, you know? I mean, it's crazy that he can do some of the things that he does in his people, some of the testings and the trials and the long time of waiting for him to answer prayer or for him to change something in us that's grievous to us, you know, even, and yet he makes you fall more deeply in love with him in that place. And
so talk about that a minute. Talk about, I mean, the very thing you're talking about going through trials and difficulties in a dark place, and yet it makes us love him more. I mean, it almost sounds counterintuitive.
Yeah. But,
yeah,
I mean, it's because, yeah, and it is to us. You know, we kind of say, well, stop. If you stop, I'll really like you, Jesus, you know, if you stop and answer all my prayers, you know. But it isn't. It's the desert and the wilderness. It's the same place. You get a voice. And that's what's coming is we've all been so tested and tried in fires of different kinds, you know, having people disappoint us and disappointing ourselves and having God disappoint us in powerful ways and mystery and not knowing what's going on and not being able to, you know, perplexity that's mind-numbing sometimes and is it really am I disqualified? I mean, that feeling is constantly coming, and yet it's the very place where we both fall more in love with him because he makes us desperate for him and there's nothing else, and that's a good place to be. And it's the place that we get a voice. It's the same fire that cleanses us and purifies us. It's the same fire that establishes us in our calling, whatever it is.
And
for all
voice
of
that
us.
We really want.
And for all of us, it's a voice. It's not necessarily speaking or writing or conferences or, you know, I think people think that's important. It's not. The only thing that a person doing those things is called to do is to equip the people that are doing it. That's where the Lord's heart is. Equip my people to do what I called them to do and get out of my way and don't make a name for yourself, but just equip my people. Because God wants his people to have a voice, because multitudes are coming into a harvest, to the great harvest. Multitudes. That means every single person is going to be on harvest overload. You know, they're just going to be, oh, my gosh. Every person I pray for is getting healed. Every person I talk to is getting saved. Signs and wonders are following me, and I didn't even think, you know, I could pray for a headache, let alone a terrible disease to go away. But that is what's coming, because God said when darkness covers the earth and deep darkness the people, it will not be on you. He said light will be on you. So arise and shine, for your light has come and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you. And that is what we're walking into. And so that, yes, I want to share it, because I know what the enemy tells me. You know, are uniquely disqualified. You know, and the reason, you know,
so
the reason you're waiting is because you have nothing to say and you have nothing to offer. And I know that he's saying...
Half a minute.
Because
I know that people are sitting here who don't know you, who might say, yeah, but that's Lee speaking who's had the perfect life. And what would you say to people who say, that's Lee who's speaking who's had the perfect life?
Santa Maria? Oh, my gosh. I mean, I've been blessed amazingly, yes, but no, I spent the last 9 years in a prison. I had a brain virus where I literally thought I could, if Gary unlocked his gun, I would have taken it, except that I don't want to leave that legacy to my children. But I was in so much excruciating pain for over 3.5 years of mind-numbing pain. And then walking through something that ministry-wise, it was so hard, and then for the Lord to just put me out into pasture. And having to remember that it was a kind, loving, thing to do, but mostly feeling abandoned. And at many times I worshipped him in it and through it, and other times I just said, you know, I quit. It wasn't the first time I quit. I'm famous
uh-huh.
for quitting. And and then every time I step into a ministry, I end up being running into a very controlling woman with a power grab, and every time I lose, and I go home, and it's over, and I'm done, and I'm sitting there, and everything I poured myself into is done, you know. And so,
this love that you have for God has really been created in the crucible, in the furnace.
It has, not as fiery as some people have, you know, not as fiery as some people have. So when I think the thing that I, when I speak to women, the Lord, it's like, do not, you must know who these women are to me. You must understand that many of them walk where you don't walk. They know things you don't know. They obey in ways that you don't obey. So you just bring something. That's what this whole thing is. I mean, there is the ground is level at the cross. The playing field, I like to level the playing field from what we've been taught so many times, because there's people out there in fires and afflictions and trusting God and you know, whatever part we have to tell them what they're, like you, Gary, telling them what they're calling and helping them see their calling and lifting them up and giving them courage to go on a little bit more. Because it's because of his jealous love for them. It's his, because you can't, if once he catches your heart as the bride, then it's his heart for his entire bride, you know. So I think this narcissism that's in the body of Christ is just, it's destroying people.
So let me ask.
So just tell me to shut up.
No.
So let me ask a question. First of all, are we having dinner after this call?
Yeah, Jesse made it.
Remember? Just kidding.
Jesse made it last
night. Oh, that's right. So we are eating.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. So, you know, one thing I know you tried. Yeah, it was supposed to be a joke.
Okay.
I tell you, I'm just a sensitive heart without profound words, so don't worry about it. So, you know, one thing I know you speak to, it goes back to what you just said before, in a way, is that so many people think that their life is so different than the person they're hearing from.
Mm-hmm.
That they have this, you know, mundane life, but not that person who's speaking or writing or sitting over the other side of the table over lunch or something like that. And, I mean, and speak to that, because, anyway.
Because the Lord will heal, I mean, literally every place I started would come to an end, and then even he'll let me speak once a year. That's it. Once a year he'll open a door, and then it's over. And it's and I spend a lot of my time buying my mom's cat food and vacuuming, and then I even stopped vacuuming. So there's no such thing as that. And I talk about Jeff Todd, a well placed lie. Oh, my gosh. It's just thinking that, you know, somebody else has it going on, and they don't. They don't, because, you know, it's the place the Lord is trying to get us to now, maybe more than ever, maybe not, I don't know, but is utter and total leaning on him and his affection for us. And so when we are, you know, really successful and, you know, everything works, then you don't even know that you are in the presence of the flesh sometimes, because the momentum looks like it's from God, but it doesn't mean that it's from God, you know. And he reminds me of this a lot, but I, you know, then I think, oh, they must be the ones you really like, you know, and you must be blessing them. But I'm telling you, you know, I've had my share of humiliations, and some from very well-known people I've been humiliated by. And sometimes I love it because that is the safest place to be. The cross and the humiliation and the utter and complete and total dependence is really the only place that the end time church is going to have power. And all those who are, you know, fighting for first place and are making themselves first, they'll see they will not be entrusted with power until they walk away from that. And but it's the power that's coming. So
Lee, what's the thing? If you could name just one thing that really breaks your heart that you see happening in people, with people, around people, to people, what's that thing that breaks your heart, or what's that battle that you feel like you have to fight? You know, not somebody else, you have to be in that fight.
I think it's the orphan. I think it's literally the orphans, but it's also the orphan in us, the place where we feel orphaned, the place where something happens and it feels like that you're not loved, that you're not wanted, that you don't belong, that your stuff has kept you from belonging. So just probably that's the thing that I fight the most, the thing that I, when I get it, the thing that I want, the thing that when I'm talking to somebody about it, it brings me back to the right place. You know, when I can say to somebody, you're not an orphan, and you know, the beauty of who you are, you're not, he said, I will not leave you as orphans. I will never leave you. It has nothing to do with your circumstances, whether there were poor choices that were made by us or things that happened, because we all have all of that, you know. It's Simba in The Lion King, you know. He walks out, and now he's an orphan. And now he lives like a warthog, you know, singing Hakuna Matata, because he has no idea of the weight of his life. And yet the whole world, the Bible says, is groaning for the revealing of the sons of God. And so the weight of everyone's life that's come from all the testing and the trials and the mistakes, the failures, the betrayals, the good hard choices, the time spent in the Word, when you know all of that is bringing incredible weight to our lives, so that when God says no, remember who you are, and then calls us out of that place in His timing for His kingdom, then you go, and suddenly, oh my gosh, it's all there. It's what you were born with, like Simba. I was born into royalty, but untested. And then when he's tested, and then when he's in the fire, and then when he gives up all hope, still the king comes and tells him who he is, and then he brings the weight of all of that story to bear on other people's lives and rescue. And
so what are the lies that you hear? Like if you... You said you feel the orphan message. What are the lies that you hear when you're sort of in that moment or in that place?
Oh, my gosh.
When the lies are looming large.
Yeah. You did it wrong is constant. It's just a constant sentence. And Misty helps me remember. That's what I'm hearing. That you're not... That you'll never touch your call, that you'll never, that you're not wanted, that you're stupid, that you're ugly. I mean, it's just, I think, I don't know if we even get very many different ones, that they're all around the same kind of thing, and we get them all day.
Yeah, and I think that's just an example why we need each other, because we can hear you say that, and we can say, what? You touch us as you're talking right now.
Yeah, but, you don't...
But you need to hear us say that sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. But
you need to hear God
the Lord He grounded me
for,
it's been like 9 years, with very tiny little bits and pieces of things. And of course, some of that time I still had several children at home, and I still have one at home. So I'm not looking to run
you
around
Gary?
The world. Yeah. Yep. But I said children, not immature
really...
people. Yeah.
You
no,
guys
so,
are great.
She teed it up for me, Gary.
Yeah, you guys are playing off
go
each
ahead,
other.
Go ahead,
no,
lady.
Just go right ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm doing that thing, Gary, you don't like. I'm just talking too long, right?
No.
Where you?
See,
not
you're
at
doing it again.
I'm supposed to do something.
You're doing it again.
I
we
did it wrong.
What you're saying.
Oh,
we
I just
love
felt
what
that.
You're saying.
I
yeah,
did it wrong.
Just,
that just went through
just,
me.
That's
anyway.
Really funny. Case in
yeah.
point, right there.
Yeah.
No,
did you
it's great.
Did you really hear that, Lee?
Yeah. Yeah. All of a sudden, I thought, oh, I'm talking too much.
No,
you did it wrong. Ah.
Nope. You did a great. You're doing a terrific job. We're inspired.
Okay.
So let me ask you a question. You want to infect other people in a good way with this abandon, overwhelming devotion, love for Christ. What do you do? What you know, someone says to you, I want what you have, Lee, I want that more. What would you say to them?
Oh, well, I would say yeah, the answer to that cry is a bitch, you know, because it really it's a cry of our heart. It's a cry for a kiss, a song of songs, a cry, kiss me with the kisses of your word, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a cry for intimacy. And we cry it to the Lord, and we've all been crying it to the Lord. I want more of you. I want, you know, in different ways. But it's then we have to go through the process, you know. We have to, it's when he said, you have to buy gold from me, you know. And the gold is in the fire, and we've been through the fire. So it's just what everybody is doing. They're doing it right now. They've been doing it. They did it before. They did it better than me. More is coming for all of us. But the fire, you know, the place where we had to look at things in our lives, the place where we had to walk away from what the Lord was asking us to walk away from, but not... think, you know, but know that it was his jealous love that he was asking, that to walk in holiness, to live, you know, for all the thing we're all trying to do, to understand him and his ways and his word, and to live in it day and night. You know, there's a song out of IHOP, and it's 10,000 times I will take up your word in my hand. When I feel you and when I don't, when I'm happy, when I'm sad, 10,000 times. And it's these, you know, it's the secret place, it's the turning away from things that, I mean, there are things that we should have in our life, I'm not saying that, but just, it's what Brent said. He said we live in a love affair set in the midst of a life and death battle. But he said we make life an endless series of chores and errands and a busyness that separates us from God. And so it's the getting oil, no matter what it costs, no matter how empty or dry it might feel, no matter what other people are choosing to do, it's the secret place. It's the hours of seeking his face, whether he shows up in amazing ways or whether you feel like your prayers ran into the ceiling, you know.
It sounds like just you know, reading that song about the 10,000 hours, it seems like sometimes just saying you want to have it is just a good first step.
Hmm.
Is that, I mean, I'm bouncing this off of you. Because even, you know, when I said, Lee, how did you come into this? I said this way earlier. I said, did you, you know, spring out of the womb just saying, I love Jesus? And you said, well, it was a mixture. I partly had it and I partly wanted to have it, is what you said. And I thought that was actually a really good answer.
Hmm.
You know, I wonder sometimes if just wanting to love the Lord, wanting to be his
yeah.
beloved, doesn't
yeah. Yeah.
move
and
us
then,
in that direction.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I've seen with Lee in listening to her, and the most current time was this couples retreat 3 weeks ago or so.
Yeah.
With Lee, one of the things you do so well as you speak is you help people reinterpret, you know, life and the hand of God in their life, because you speak so much to, you know, training, God's training of that person for the moment they're living in, for the role they have to play, to how to bring the glory of their life powerfully and purely to the world. And, you know, how much we misinterpret things as the meanness of God or the absence of God. And I mean, I just saw that over the weekend, just the look in their eyes was, I see it now. I see that God was actually in this. And it really, truly was for my good, as hard as that was. And I just think that's something, I see that as one of the great effects that you have on people when you speak. And I know that's your heart. I mean, you've just been saying that, to really see God and what he's up
mm-hmm.
to versus
mm-hmm.
how we misinterpret it, you know. And then it takes us out and we walk away from God when
right,
it should be pointing towards him.
Right, and nobody's more famous for walking away from that truth than me. I mean, I just... In some of the things that have happened, I just, you know, if I can remember the word, I think it's a song, and so I took it and put it into a talk, and that God reigns with wisdom and power and love. And so I just looked at how he reigned over Israel with wisdom, power, and love to get them where they are today. Those are the three truest things that were true of him with Israel. And then, you know, if you just look at Moses' life, and if you look at David's life, and then you look at every person you know that, you know, in all of human history, God is reigning with wisdom, power, and love. And as soon as I remember that, I can abandon myself to that reality, because it's just all that's all you need. You don't need anything else. You don't need him to do anything else. He's doing it all. He's doing it all perfectly. But the circumstances and the, you know, the length of time, and God engineers it that way so that I know this, that God orchestrates your prison sentences and your hardships and things like that so that you feel like he's gone, so that you think he's abandoned you, because then it requires only faith at that moment, and that's what he wants. You know, but we think everything shifted and he changed his mind, but the only thing that changed was we can't see him as well. But this jealous affection and love he has, and it's so hard to see it. And my brother-in-law was something that we walked through. He just kept saying to me, he said, you made it through a train wreck, and you lived, and that you know, and you keep circling the train wreck, and Jesus is inviting you down you're supposed to be down the road by now, you know, but I love to circle the train wreck and just say, you know, poor me, and because sometimes I don't want anything, I don't want to do the thing he's called me to do, I don't want it, I don't want the hardship, and so it's real easy just to, you know, say this is, this is hard.
So Lee, one of the verses that moves me to wanting to love God is a verse from Song of Solomon about God talking about loving us. So it's just one of my favorite verses in the Bible. It's Song of Solomon 6:5, where the bridegroom is saying to the bride, "Turn away your eyes from me, for they overwhelm me."
That's my favorite too.
Okay,
yeah.
I was gonna say, what does that say? I mean.
Yeah.
To
yeah.
me, part of the way I get stirred is thinking God loves me that much.
Yeah.
It's like almost, what does that verse say to you? Turn away your eyes from me.
Well, I can tell you a story where I actually saw it in a way that it was when we were in Haiti, and I finally got to a hospital, and Misty said, you know, could you go see that woman? And when I looked at her, she was, her leg was cut off from the knee down, and they're on these tiny little wretched little cots underneath, outside, because they can't be inside because the building was compromised by the earthquake, and there's a little tent over them, and the flies that are on these people, You wouldn't allow one of them on you. Multiple flies all over them. And she's, and I can see this leg, and it's bandaged, but, I mean, it's wretched looking. And she's got her sheet, and she's got it in her mouth, and she's writhing in pain, and she's trying not to make noise by stuffing her mouth with this dirty sheet. And she's rolling around. And Missy said, you know, we haven't been able to help her for 3 days. So, you know, I mean, just when I saw her, just all the life drained out of me because I thought, I got nothing for this lady.
Mm-hmm.
And there happened to be a seat next to her. And so I went and sat on it, and I took her hand, and I put my head down by and just started speaking into her ear and started praying over her. And in moments, she started, and just, I mean, so quickly, she stopped. She turned her head right into my ear. And she started saying, "Merci, Jesus. Merci, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus." I swear to God, she was looking right at him. And I am so, I can't even move. I can't even, I'm completely undone by this woman's worship, which is going into my ear. And I said to the Lord, I said, "I know what's going on here. She is undoing you." It's, that is what that verse is. In the moment when you have nothing, you have lost everything, you have nothing, you can't see, you can't, you're dying, you know, what else could happen to this woman? I don't even know her story. I don't know if she lost children, a husband, her home, let alone her leg, and she's worshiping him. That is when he says, "Turn your eyes away from me." It's when, and we've all had these moments, maybe not that drastic of losing a leg, but when we can't find him and we don't understand and it's dark and he knows it and the enemy is assaulting us relentlessly, no matter what the assault is. It could be our own failure. It could be that we really did fail. It doesn't even matter, because that was a trap set for us to fall into. So whatever it is, it doesn't matter, but we're worshiping him when we are completely without. I mean, it doesn't even make any sense for her to worship like that. And that's when she undid the Lord, and so the only thing that can undo the Lord. So that's how I understand that verse. And that's, I actually got to see it firsthand, and I just thought, would I ever be that beautiful? You know, because she was undoing him, I know it, because she was undoing me, and I don't have the heart that the Lord has. I don't have that heart that I don't see the end from the beginning. I don't know how much pain she was actually in. I don't know how much she lost. I don't love, you know, I don't even kind of love. He loves with perfect, constant affection and love, and I don't. And so if she's moving me.
But I think you're moving us, Lee, as you talk about this. You really are, you know.
So that's,
and I'm thankful that you are. I'm really thankful that you are. So I just have one last question for both of you, if you don't mind. This has been, I just can't believe it. I just looked at the clock, and it's 6:45 your time, 7:45. I don't know what time it is, everybody. But it's been delightful, Lee. It has. But I have a question for both of you in a certain sense. And this is from Bob Kane. How would you, Lee, and Gary describe how you were designed for each other in marriage and ministry? How do you work together? What is it God has done that's complementary? How do you, you know, I'll ask the question again the way Bob phrased it. How would you describe how you're designed for each other in marriage and in ministry? This is not a...
I'll jump in because I've been seeing the question on the chat line. And so, you know, here's the thing. What Lee does for me, as no one else, is she really pulls me back into, you know, my love affair with Jesus, my relationship with him, my intimacy. Because, you know, I can start there, and then I'm compelled into, you know, doing, producing something, you know. And part of that's good and part of it's not. But what I find, even in the good part of that, is I find myself lost in that. I'm lost in the doing, creating, producing, you know. And before I know it, you know, I've driven miles away from the gas station when I remembered earlier I was on empty. And I needed to get gas. And so, you know, Lee is the one to remind me, when's the last time you got oil, you know? You spend time with God, and that's...
She's not talking about the car at that point, I'm guessing.
Yes, exactly. Yes, thank you for
it's
clarifying that, Sam.
I'm just helping
Sam,
it for the guys out there.
And so, you know, that's huge. I mean, this place that she plays in my life, that's the spiritual side of this and the heart side. And then I'd say the other heart side and the relational side is I have a really good feeling, sense that if I wasn't married to Lee, there's a good chance I'd be like downtown under a bridge. In fact, my kid said that. My kid said, if you weren't married to Mom, you'd probably be living under a bridge.
Oh, brother.
I think it's true. So that's how I'd answer it.
Well, first of all, Gary's tall, dark, and handsome. That's my favorite thing. And
hey, Sam, stop laughing. She's talking.
I'm going to mute myself.
Yeah, and you know what I think? I mean, I think there are multitudes of ways that Gary loves me better than I love him. I mean, he's just very good at it. He's very good at it. He's very loving, very affectionate, very... Just in the ways that over our 33 years together, he's just loved me. And so that's the call of a husband. I mean, just no matter, you know, just loving, constantly giving. I mean, he's constantly giving to me. So I think, but he kind of likes to talk about the glory of your life, and I kind of like to talk about the glory of your wasted life. So I like to think that they come together, you know, someplace. And we talked about that at the little couples weekend we did. We talked about shared destiny. And sometimes it does not go well, you know. And we had many years where it wasn't shared destiny. It was, obviously, because you're fighting for it and you're, I mean, just even your children or the money that you give away or the people that you love or the, you know, the way you reach out to neighbors or to other people is part of your shared destiny. But, you know, it doesn't, I you know, that would be a place if people think it looks amazing very often. It doesn't. I think it's just that it's in that stuff, you know. I mean, we got to do this couples retreat and we got to kind of in a moment experience some of this stuff together, but those are few and far between. I think it has more to do with, you know, just I even think to the fact that we're all trying to have a loving, godly family is keeping this nation, you know, God's, you know, just God's favor on it in moments, you know, and God's anyway, it matters that we all have loving, godly families and we're fighting for it because it's a gift we give to our nation and it's something we're all trying very hard to do. It's what we want to do. It's what we're trying to do. It's what's assaulted. So I think the shared destiny is more all the little places and then occasionally we get to touch something where our gifting comes together.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of sounded rambling-ish to me, but...
No, it sounded good.
Anyway.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to read, Lee, to you a comment that Jason Reed, remember Jason
was
in Wyoming, he and his wife, Kristen, he just said, Lee, Kristen and I are riveted to every word. Thank you for offering your raw life. You are literally the most encouraging believer we have ever met.
Oh,
thank
my gosh.
Thank you for fighting like you do. So.
Yeah, you're crying.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'll get off before anybody. I don't want any more compliments. They're overwhelming me.
Hey, Lee, thank you so much. Lee and Gary, on behalf of everybody, we have just enjoyed this evening so much together. And, you know, Lee, we're not going to go so long again. We're going to get you back. We really are. We barely scratched the surface, so thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
This is great, Lee. Believe it.
Okay.
This is just rich for everybody.
Yeah. Great conversation.
Can I hang up now?
Stop doing this with you, sweetheart.
Thanks to be with whoever it is that I was with out there. I don't know. Next time I would like to hear their words. Not questions, but their words. You know, their thoughts around it. That would be neat.
Yep.
Anyway.
We'll do that. That's a great idea. All right, everybody. Thank you. Great conversation, Lee. Thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you so
much. Thank you, Sam. See you later. Bye.
Okay. Bye.